This is the Down East Journal on Public Radio East. Voters headed to the polls this year will notice a change in North Carolina's election process. For the first time, a form of government identification will be required before casting ballots. The law is controversial and subject to change, pending a court ruling. Chris Thomas has more on voter ID.
North Carolina's voter ID law went into effect this year, with the March 15 primary as its first election. The law requires would-be voters to show one of six approved forms of government-issued ID before casting a ballot. A valid driver's license, a state-issued ID card for non-drivers, or certain tribal enrollment cards will be accepted. Josh Lawson is a spokesperson for the North Carolina Board of Elections. He said there are several exceptions, as there are with most laws.
They can vote by absentee, and there's no ID requirement there. You can also show up to the polls, and there are various options that the poll workers there will walk you through.
The broadest exception to the mandatory identification law is reasonable impediment. Circumstances, including family obligations, work schedules, and transportation difficulties, are sheltered under that clause. To qualify for that exception and cast a provisional ballot, a voter will have to sign a document explaining their impediment, give a birth date, and an additional form of identification, including a voter registration card or a document with their name and address, like a bank statement.
But the big message is, show up. Regardless of what you think about the new laws that are in effect, regardless of what you think about the new districts, we want you to be part of the democratic process, and as a nonpartisan agency, we just want to get people to the polls.
The bill overhauling voting laws in North Carolina was passed in the summer of 2013. That was just after the Supreme Court struck Article 5 of the Voting Rights Act from the records. That law required certain areas of the country with a history of voter discrimination based on race to get approval from the federal government before new voting laws are enacted. One of those areas is eastern North Carolina, which has a mixed history that includes sending black representatives to Congress when other parts of the state did not, and violent, racially motivated demonstrations to keep black voters away from the polls and public life as a whole. Advocates for the new law say it's in place to prevent incidents of voter fraud, preserving a cornerstone of the American democracy. Republican Michael Speciale, who represents Beaufort, Craven, and Pamlico counties in the General Assembly, is one of those advocates.
And I just thought we need to be able to prove who we are, because the right to vote is one of the most sacred rights we have as American citizens, and we need to be able to prove that we are who we say we are.
On the other hand, critics say it's addressing a virtually non-existent problem, as initial reports of voter fraud in the 2012 election were found, mostly, lacking in substance. In 2014, it was reported that 765 people voted in North Carolina in 2012 that had the same name, birthday, and last four digits of their Social Security number as an individual who voted in another state that year. But a study done by the fact-checking website Pundit Fact showed those numbers may not be what they seem and may be due to several other reasons not related to voter fraud, including clerical errors. This raises questions from the law's critics, including Jen Jones of Democracy NC, about the law's validity and motivations.
And really, court rulings that are negating that original legislation and making many people wonder, well, why do we need it in the first place?
Still, most voter ID law supporters say Article 5 of the Voting Rights Act was unconstitutional and outdated. Furthermore, the law puts a broad variety of exceptions in place, addressing some of the key complaints raised about voter ID laws, namely, that they disproportionately affect economically disadvantaged citizens who may not be able to afford an accepted form of identification or drive to agency buildings that distribute those forms of identification.
And I think most people accept the voter ID. I think it was a good idea. I think most people believe it's a good idea. And I don't, I don't see that there's any problems with it other than from those who would oppose anything that we do as a Republican General Assembly.
Detractors, including organizers of the Moral Monday marches in Raleigh, say voter ID laws passed in North Carolina and other states around the nation are a reminder that the days of legally sanctioned disenfranchisement aren't too far behind and may be poised for a comeback. Accusations have been made that the law's true intent is maintaining a partisan edge at the expense of certain socioeconomic groups who tend to vote Democrat, namely black, Latino, and young voters. It's also been said that the provisions put in place to stave off worries of disenfranchisement may have had the complete opposite effect, sowing seeds of confusion among voters, allowing half-truths and full lies to circulate.
that acts as a deterrent. And that misinformation and those myths about what you can and cannot do, I imagine will keep people home.
Like a number of other matters surrounding the 2016 election in North Carolina, the voter ID requirement issue is far from settled. A trial over the ID law ended February 1st, and the decision is now in the hands of U.S. District Judge Thomas Schrader. A verdict has not been reached, but it's almost guaranteed an appeal will be made, regardless of the result. The full law won't even be in effect this year, since same-day voting registration is still in place for those who missed the initial February 19th registration deadline. That's available at early voting sites until the last day of early voting on March 12th. That, as you've probably already guessed, is also subject to litigation. I'm Chris Thomas.
Spring is coming, and typically it's high time for real estate sales. Sarah Finch leads us through the ups and downs of Eastern North Carolina's current real estate market.
The good news is home sales are up from lows during the Great Recession, but not at peak price, which makes for a good buyer's market. But that doesn't mean it's great across the board.
You know, there's no such thing as a national real estate market. It's so localized.
That was Mary Cheatham King, based out of Moorhead City. She's been in real estate since 2003 and has seen many shifts in the property market. This time around, despite a growing state economy, the rebound in home prices has varied considerably within the state. East Carolina University Department of Economics professor Philip Rothman.
My hunch is that recovery of real estate prices is likely to be stronger in the larger towns and cities of the area as opposed to the smaller places.
While the local economy affects these different markets, the real estate industry as a whole plays a significant role in our state's financial status. Last year, it accounted for $68.6 million, which made it the second largest industry contributing to North Carolina's gross state product. Real estate is such a large part of GDP that some believe significant changes in the housing market can affect the trajectory of our economy as a whole.
The main economic indicators that people look at as a measure of the health of the economy are GDP growth, and I'd say the real estate sector certainly historically has played a big role.
Case in point would be the Great Recession, where deflating the housing bubble nearly collapsed the entire financial system. Under normal conditions, the strength or weakness of our overall economy is what charts the course for housing. In a vibrant economy, jobs are plentiful, and the personal mobility and income that results is translated into strong numbers for home sales.
In a normal economy with GDP growth rate and income growth rates back at normal levels, then there seems to be a pretty natural process as people work their way through their life cycles.
A typical person moves through a series of houses over the course of their lifetime. The size and location of these homes will change as the individual's needs transition, such as larger properties for growing families or unique communities for retiring couples. Rothman explains that North Carolina experienced a milder housing cycle during the Great Recession in comparison to the nation as a whole.
Building up to 2005, 2006, Eastern North Carolina did not experience as much massive growth in real estate prices as in lots of the hot spots of the housing crisis, such as Phoenix, Las Vegas. However, real estate prices did decline with the onset of the Great Recession.
In many of the towns in eastern North Carolina, home prices are still lower today than they were approximately 7 years ago. For instance, in Carteret County, the average home price was $280,000 at peak market in 2007. During the lowest point of the recession, house prices dove to $220,000. Today, that number would be back up to $240,000. Goldsboro held record buys during 2009, with prices averaging at $145,000. After falling $22,000 in just 2 years, it's bounced back to around $137,000. Military families in Jacksonville saw the average home prices soar from $136,000 in 2005 to $180,000 in 2013. These days, home prices are holding steady at $153,000. Compared with the rest of the country, home prices peaked a little later and fell to a milder extent in North Carolina. They also bounced back less dramatically. Keller Williams real estate agent Wayne Brazier has been in business for 15 years. He currently heads a team serving Jones, Pamlico, Carteret, and Craven counties. Wayne has noticed the same pricing pattern in New Bern, highest before the recession, sinking in subsequent years, and now trying to rebound.
You know, the average sales prices of the houses back in those days was like $220,000 a house. And today, they're still in and around the $170,000 range.
The good news for sellers is the increase in buyers the lower prices have attracted. 2015 boasted the highest number of housing units sold in over 6 years. Wayne reiterates that if you've ever bought or sold a house, you know timing is everything.
In real estate, you go through where there's a buyer's market and a seller's market. Where it's balanced is a very short time. That's more of a 7 to 10 year cycle. So if I'm in a buyer's market today, probably in the next 7 to 10 years, I will go through a seller's market.
Still, market conditions will vary, with urban areas having an advantage.
When I talk about our numbers here, about 190 days on the market for an average house to sell. If you look at Raleigh and that particular area right now, I've talked to several agents and their average days on the market are like 42.
Clearly, the area that the house is in greatly affects its marketability. Hence the old saying, location, location, location.
We all don't experience the same market at the same time. So even when we were at our lowest, Jacksonville, just 30 miles down the road, was screaming, selling all kinds of properties. Also, a place like Atlantic Beach, Morehead City, they have a lot of high-dollar properties. And so when those prices dropped, their market went way down.
Carteret County real estate broker Mary Cheatham King specializes in those luxury coastal homes. She leads a team of realtors in Morehead City where they cater to a seasonal crowd. But the lure of sand and surf was still not enough to keep their market afloat.
I think that tourism certainly has helped our market, but you've also got to keep in mind that so much of the high-end property, so much of the money in our area comes from second homeowners, and what's the first thing that goes during a recession? You know, it's those non-essentials.
Yet with the uptick in the economy, she says people are now willing to spend money again, especially on those high-end properties. And when is the best time to hook your dream beach house? Well, according to Mary, it's not what you might think.
A lot of folks think of our selling season on the coast as being in the summertime, but it's really not, in my opinion. It's more late winter, early spring. Folks who are making purchases, particularly second home purchases, really like to be settled in by the time the sun comes out and it's time for them to enjoy their new property. With Easter being early this year, I think that's going to be even more true.
Mary says a seller's market may not be too far off.
The biggest trend that I think we're seeing in our coastal market is that things are improving. Things began to improve over a year ago, but what we saw with our last selling season was that the inventory skyrocketed because I think a lot of sellers heard the message loud and clear that market conditions have improved and it's time to sell.
But if you can hold out longer, it could be even better in the future as the prices rise. North Carolina's housing market is continuing to gain momentum, which proves a great time to advertise property. Wayne says when discussing options with your real estate agent, ensure your property is at a competitive pricing point.
It's definitely a buyer's market, and when you have a lot of houses on the market, obviously the buyers have a lot more choices.
As a buyer, you hold the power and you make the demands. And as more houses are added to the MLS every day, your options increase. Mary encourages prospective buyers to set sail on this new adventure with clear guidelines in mind.
I really think that prices in our market are going to continue to increase as we go through the remainder of the selling season and into the summer. If you're a buyer, I would say go ahead and put those feelers out and start looking.
The bottom line is, since the Great Recession, home prices have rebounded across the nation. But here in North Carolina, we still have some catching up to do. For Public Radio East, I'm Sarah Finch.
We go now from rebounding home sales to recovering turkey populations. North Carolina's numbers are at an all-time high. They've been steadily increasing across the state, but here in eastern North Carolina, turkeys have made a major comeback. Now, the Wildlife Resources Commission is encouraging people to take up hunting. Seminars are being held across the state to teach amateurs and experts alike the methods for hunting turkey.
That might surprise some folks that we want, if we're interested in conserving a game animal, that we actually want more hunters.
Upland game bird biologist Chris Cray says although it sounds counterintuitive, hunting is a beneficial way of conserving a species.
Hunters are really true conservationists. They're passionate about the sport. They're passionate about turkeys. They are involved in habitat management. They're involved in educating other folks about what turkeys need and looking out for the resource.
In North Carolina as a whole, Cray says the turkey population is booming, although some places have disparities. In the mountains and along the Virginia border, turkey numbers have started to level off or drop slightly, but populations continue to expand rapidly in eastern North Carolina.
Currently, we have around 265,000 turkeys in the state. That's not a perfect estimate. It's a rough estimate, and it's based largely on the number of turkeys that we see harvested in the spring season every year.
They also use data gathered during the annual Turkey Observation Survey, where volunteer spotters record the number of turkeys they see during a two-month period during the summer. Over the years the survey's been conducted, upward trends have been noticed in turkey populations. Since 2005, the number of turkeys across the state has grown by an estimated 115,000, with population increase here in eastern North Carolina being the most significant.
Those birds are moving into areas of suitable habitat. Reproduction has been good during the summertime, so turkeys are capable of producing a lot of young each year. And the habitat conditions are just really conducive to wild turkeys in that part of the state.
Many places like Craven, Duplin, and Pender counties now support thriving turkey populations, but this wasn't always the case. In the 60s and 70s, turkeys were only found in small pockets because of hunting pressure and habitat destruction. At one time, there was only about 2,000 turkeys in the entire state.
At that point, we changed a lot of the hunting regulations, and we began a process of capturing wild turkeys and releasing them in areas that had suitable habitat, and allowing the birds to flourish once they got into that suitable habitat. And really, the turkeys did it themselves. It just needed a little help to get there.
Now that populations have bounced back, the North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission is encouraging hunters to take part in this year's wild turkey season, which starts April 9th and runs through May 7th. A youth-only week runs from April 2nd to the 8th. Hunters are allowed a maximum of one turkey per day and two turkeys per season. The Commission and the National Wildlife Turkey Federation are offering 24 hunting seminars across the state, which cover topics including biology, calls, and decoys. Cray says the seminars cover the basics and more advanced methods of hunting turkeys.
What are they doing during the springtime? What are they doing during the season? What might hunters encounter when they're in the field? It'll also cover aspects about different types of turkey calls that they might use, how to use them, different scenarios that they might encounter while they're in the field, how to deal with different types of turkeys, how to find a place to turkey hunt, you know, game land opportunities, those type of things. All that will be discussed at those seminars.
About 1,400 people have attended the seminars so far. There are 9 classes left, 2 of which will be in our area. There's an introduction seminar in Jacksonville planned for Monday, March 21st at 6:30 at the Onslow County Center. An advanced level class will be held the next day. For more information on how to register, go to publicradioeast.org and click on this story. If hunting turkey isn't your thing, you can try hunting stars in the night sky. Today on the Down East Journal, we begin a new monthly segment on astronomy. We'll be talking about what you can spot in the night sky, from constellations and planets to nebulas and galaxies. And you're going to want to listen to this again. We'll have some tips on how to best utilize the information you're about to hear at the end of this segment. Our host is Byron Mumaw, the president of the Carolina Skies Astronomy Club. His fascination of the night sky began at an early age, reading Sky and Telescope magazine, and has turned over the years into a lifelong passion. Today, Byron tells us about one of the most recognizable constellations in the Carolina sky.
Orion is my favorite constellation. It's easy to spot. It's a winter constellation, which means we're nearing the end of the time period of the season when we can observe it. A great thing about Orion is it's one of the few constellations that actually looks like what it's described as. Orion is the hunter. This is from Greek mythology. And when you look at that, you can really visualize an ancient Greek hunter or warrior standing there with his club raised up in the air, a shield in front of him. Right now, if you're looking for Orion, what you want to do is go out just after dark, face south, look at the sky, and the brightest star you'll see up there is Sirius, which is due south at 8 o'clock at night. Spot that, and then turn a little bit farther to the right and look up a little bit higher, and that's where you see constellation Orion. I really like Orion because there's so much to see there. The most famous thing is Betelgeuse. That's the bright red supergiant star that's to your upper left that forms his shoulder. That is a huge old star. If it was positioned where our sun is, it is so large that the Earth would actually be contained within the star. It's nearing the end of its lifetime. Because it's a giant star, it's used up its fuel very rapidly, and sometime, probably within the next million years, which is really short term in terms of astronomy, it will explode in a supernova. It'll be brighter than the full moon at night. In fact, you could probably even see it in the daytime. Going down to the lower right corner, you'll see another supergiant star, but this one is bright blue. That's Rigel. It's a very young star, extremely hot. In the middle, something that makes it easy to spot Orion, are the three belt stars, lined up in a row. They're very bright, but they're very far away. The one in the middle is 2,000 light years distant. The most famous thing in Orion might be the Orion Nebula. If you're at a dark, clear site, you can actually see that nebula with your naked eye. If you want to find that, you look straight down from the center of the three belt stars, and it looks like three much fainter stars in a row. And that's the sword of Orion dangling from his belt. The middle of those faint stars, that's where you look to see Orion Nebula. And when you look at that through a telescope, you'll see it's actually this glowing cloud of hydrogen gas. In the middle of it, four small bright stars, and it's the light from those stars that's causing the gas in that nebula to glow. Also there in Orion, you can find examples of the two other types of nebula. Dark nebula, because it doesn't emit any light, and it just blocks light. So the bright nebula is behind it, glowing, and here you have this dark cloud in front of it. You can also see the third type of nebulas in places there where you see examples of glowing blue glow, which is a reflection nebula where just the light reflecting from these blue-white stars is reflecting off of a gas cloud. So there you have all three types of nebula just within Orion. Exciting constellation to look at for everybody, especially when they see it the first time through a telescope.
To take full advantage of the information you just heard, head out to a dark spot in eastern North Carolina this weekend with your smartphone and a friend and see if you can spot the Orion constellation. And you can stream the Carolina Skies segment from our website, publicradioeast.org, as you gaze into the night sky.
I have the eye in the sky, looking at you. I can read your mind. I am the maker of rules, dealing with fools. I can change your blind. And I don't need to see anymore to know that I can read your mind.
I live in Swansboro, North Carolina, and I've been listening for 4 years. I like the morning program, All Things Considered, and Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Public radio, I think, is a national treasure. My radio preset set to it. To me, it's brain candy. Every morning I listen to it, feel a little bit smarter going through the day. I think it's important. Became a new member. Now was the right time. I spent a career moving around with the military, listening to NPR on radio stations around the country. And now that I've settled in my permanent area, I couldn't wait to join. There's no better time than now. I couldn't think of a reason why I would wait until the next drive. When I heard it, I just said, now's the time to do it. I understand the listener support is a big revenue stream for the station, and I wanted to do my part. I am David Kramer, and I am Public Radio East.
Solve clues, complete challenges, and work together to discover New Bern's hidden gems. It's the Downtown Dare this Saturday. Teams of 2, 3, or 4 will use their smartphones and knowledge of New Bern to find the answers to clues while racing from checkpoint to checkpoint.
My name is Rhonda Bernthal. I'm the Director of Advancement at the Epiphany School of Global Studies. This is our second year doing the Downtown Dare. the best way I can describe it is it's kind of like an amazing race in downtown New Bern. It combines both wits and speed and challenges, and it lets people to explore downtown in a whole new way. The Downtown Dare benefits the Open Door Scholarship at the Epiphany School of Global Studies. And the Open Door Scholarship provides need-based funding to students with proven academic excellence. The Downtown Dare is scheduled for this Saturday, March 12th, in downtown New Bern, located on East Front Street is where we'll be gathering by the Neuse River. Registration on site will begin at 8:30 that morning. For more information on this nonprofit event, go to publicradioeast.org events calendar.
Thanks for listening to the Downeast Journal. If you have questions, comments, or ideas for features, drop us a line at publicradioeast.org. Have a great weekend.